Totally Football League Show, International Break Edition, aka Club Statement Season. Yes, managers are abandoning posts like a mail carrier staring through a letterbox at an angry Rottweiler. Barnsley's arrested development means it's the end for Mr. Stendhal, yeah. In South London, Millwall legend Neil Harris opts to leave the Lions' Den before there's any chance of a mauling. Elsewhere, Jack off at Sunderland and Jose Goze at Reading. Not to mention vacancies at Southend, Stevenage and Orient that still need filling. Crikey. Hello again. Despite what you've been led to believe, I'm Matt Davis-Adams, suffering from vertigo at the top of the Championship. I've got my usual crew of EFL experts alongside me today. First up, he survived Millwall v Leeds on Saturday. I say survived. We know him as a gentle soul, but there's something of the thug about his appearance, so I'm sure any likely lads en route to the Den kept their distance. From Swindon goal machine to multi-platform broadcaster par excellence, hello, Sam Parkin.
Good morning, Matt. How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
And with Sam, he was born in Northampton and studied at the Royal College of Music and the London Opera Centre. He's a regular guest at London's Royal Opera. His recordings include The Triumph of Beauty and Deceit for Largo, Les Troyens, Carmen and Sophie's Choice for Optus Arte DVD/Blu-ray. Music Web International described his baritone performance in Maharal as suitably dominant in both voice and stature, but we glimpse his vulnerability when the forces of nature get out of hand. Let's hear him in action now.
It's not me, it's not that I'm under pressure. The contract must be signed before I leave.
Never a truer word spoken, right, Adrian?
Absolutely. I am the king of the deep voice.
And what are the odds he's actually showed up for work today? Still somewhat comatose after sitting through Bolton v Blackpool on Monday night. From William Hill, it's Joe Crilly.
It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Right then, on we crack to the Championship. If you like managerial chat, you're in for a treat.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
Headlines from the top flight brackets of the EFL, close brackets. Stoke have won a game. I repeat, Stoke have won a game. Jose Gomez and Reading have seemingly abandoned their marriage counselling and lawyered up in preparation for divorce. Stoke have won a game. It's the end all for Stendhal at Oakwell. Stoke have won a game. And Neil Harris has left Millwall. Before we get into the managerial departures, let's start positive and pay tribute to Stoke, who you may have heard, have won a game for the first time since the start of April and their fourth league win of 2019. Is Nathan Jones' luck finally turning then? They were a goal down a minute into their game at Graham Potter's high-flying Swans, worst tribute act ever, before turning it round to pinch the points in stoppage time. Jones even named Manager of the Week by the EFL. Next game for Stoke post-break, home to Fulham. Then they go to Millwall and Sheffield Wednesday. Adrian, can they stay up? Can he keep his job?
It looks like it, doesn't it? All of a sudden, the interview he gave the week before sounded like a resignation. It sounded like he feared he was going to get the bullet. It didn't happen, and it seems to have perked him up and everybody else. The most interesting quote I read of the week came from Nathan, and he said, look, you might have known, I think he was asked something about, you look more animated on the touchline, you're jumping around. He said, well, that's what I used to be like when I was at Luton. Anyone Luton fan will tell you that. I sort of kick every ball. But when I came here into the Championship, I'll be honest, I didn't want to look like people to think I would be a lunatic. Now, I reckon that's partly why it's gone so badly for him. Maybe he's been a bit too self-conscious about where he is, the size of the club he's managing, in the division that he's managing. Maybe he's been too self-aware. He does need to be himself, and that I think is the recognition of where perhaps he was going wrong. I think is perhaps the start of a recovery. The players did a great performance at Swansea, and it has been fine margins. I was looking at some of the stats. They've been levelling games for exactly the same number of minutes as Birmingham City. I think 18 minutes less than Leeds, yet they've got barely any points, and Leeds and Birmingham are away in the distance. So it is fine margins. I do think that his moans and groans about bad luck have been a factor.
Sammy's got two big things in his favour, it would seem. The first is he's at Stoke, who like to give managers as much rope as possible, as we've seen in the past. And also, surely you can tell from that win on Saturday that the players are still with him, because to go a goal down at a team who look like they're going to be chasing promotion, come back and win it in stoppage time, that shows the right attitude from the squad.
Yeah, I think the timing of the game probably helped him. If the break had come straight after the Huddersfield game, I don't think we'd probably be having this conversation. Yeah. It looked like his days were numbered from his manner after that defeat. We expected him to go. But I think you're bang on what you just said there. And not only being able to recover from going a goal down early, but the, yes, it's brilliant to score last minute and win a game, but the level of the celebration from the players said to me that they were obviously delighted to get the win, but delighted for the manager as well. So it didn't look like a club that or a group of players that were desperate for a change. And it was a fantastic victory. And Adrian's mentioned the numbers there. Early part of the season, obviously, they were creating plenty of chances and there was a fragility about them defensively. Well, that wasn't evident at the weekend. And hopefully they can build from there. And hopefully he'll keep his job, which will be brilliant given what's gone the last couple of days. I'd be delighted if he turns it around there.
Yep, fingers crossed for Nathan. To the bagpacking managers then, and today shall henceforth be known as Club Statement Day, Millwall wrote...
Neil Harris has today stepped down from his role as manager of Millwall Football Club. His assistant David Livermore has also departed the den. Harris took over as boss in 2015 and during his time in charge oversaw two trips to Wembley, one promotion and two runs to the FA Cup quarter-finals, and has also steadily re-established Millwall as a championship club. His status as a Lions legend, both as its all-time leading goal scorer and now as one of its most successful managers, is secure.
Right, compare that heartfelt sentiment to Barnsley's thank you and goodbye note, which didn't contain either a thank you or a goodbye. Barnsley Football Club confirms it's separated from Daniel Stendel with immediate effect. Adam Murray's been appointed caretaker manager. We'll start with Stendel. It's the most recent of the two. A 5-1 walloping at Preston last weekend proved the final straw for the German, whose team hadn't won since opening day. Feels harsh, but to play devil's advocate, his team had been walloped 5-1 and they haven't won since opening day. So it's not entirely unexpected, I suppose.
It's still the one that surprised me the most. 11 games in, Matt, after a wonderful first season in English football. That said, I saw them against Brentford and I actually can't remember seeing a defence at that level, current championship, where it's got to, being so disorganised. It was incredible what I was watching. And listen, I've not been a manager. I've coached some under seven teams and some school teams and stuff like that. But I mean, it was like he sent his players out like lambs to the slaughter in that second half against the very gifted Brentford team who were fantastic on the counter-attack. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So they haven't got enough defensively-minded midfield players, but he's had the opportunity to alter the formation, maybe get a third centre-half in there. The problem he's got is I don't think he's got particularly defensively-minded full-backs either. They bomb on. The left-back was left out to dry in that game against Brentford. So I spoke about it probably the last couple of weeks about the need to be more pragmatic in the setup. And on the back of that, they've been thumped by Preston. So I don't understand why he hasn't learnt from that defeat against Brentford. He must have seen how bad they were in that second half particularly.
My view on this is quite simple, really. He had his team decimated. It wasn't him that decided to sell the goalie and the two centre-halves and the striker Kiefer Moore, was it? It was the club's decision. The mistake, I guess, is that the players brought in didn't have championship experience and it's proven that they're not quite good enough. I'll definitely take Sam's point in terms of could he have organised them better? Could he have adapted to their flaws? He could. He didn't. He's lost his job. But the bottom line is he had a quality team that he'd constructed and it got broken up. And I think it's really, really harsh. Remember, take into account last year, 39 goals conceded in 46 games. He's not a manager that's known for being leaky. They're the best defensive record in the division. So, feels harsh to me. I think with good players, Daniel Stendel will come again and be a very successful manager. I know that he's been linked with one of the vacancies that's arisen this week.
As for Millwall, not won in the league since the 17th of August. So, does that mean it's quite a sort of selfless and good decision from Neil Harris? Or is he just jumping before he's pushed?
Firstly, I'm sad about it because I really like Neil and I've played with David Livermore at a couple of clubs. So it was strange being there at the weekend and this can get thrown out there probably, but there was a weird mood around the club and they're very emotional, the staff, the press guys, etc. that I spoke to before the game, and they're hurting at the moment. So on the face of it, having thought about it for a few days after the announcement, I think it's the right decision for Neil. I think it's the right time. The fans at Luton, the away game recently, were quite scathing in the second half. And considering what Neil is at that club, I just think it was the right time. You know, that we know they're very passionate and the football's not been good this season, and considering he was given a bit of an opportunity, some money, to bring in some fresh blood and get rid of those bad eggs at the back end of last season, he did that, and the football has probably gone backwards. And I think that's been the criticism. It's always been quite a direct style, but I think caution as well as overrided the attacking intent that you associate with Millwall. So it's difficult when you think about where they're going to go from here, because of course it can't be tippy-tappy at Millwall, but I think it just has to be more attacking, flooding bodies forward. Yes, you might concede a few, but at least the punters get value for money.
Dan's tweeted at the Totally Show, who's the best fit for the Millwall job, Clarke? You want Neil Harris at Southend, don't you? Fanciful is the word that sprung to mind.
Yeah, look, he's local, he played for the club. He would be just the ideal kind of manager to get them out of their rut. But it sounds to me like he needs a breather. You know, you think you can get stale, can't you? It's an all-consuming job being a football manager. It's probably partly the reason why me and Sam have gone down this route. It's a lot easier than being a gaffer. So no, I don't think that's going to happen. Who's the best fit
for Millwall? Gary Rowett.
Well, if you're going to go for the all-out attack, not all-out attack route, the passionate front foot, especially on home turf approach. Don't know if a Gary Rowett's that guy. He's a cautious manager by nature, isn't he? He's a very good organiser. I think he'd keep plenty of clean sheets. He'd be a good fit, I suppose, in a lot of respects. The wild card that's in the betting at the moment, and Joe will confirm this, I'm sure, is Kevin Muscat.
Past Brebner. Muscat, he's off again. A second straight red card for Kevin Muscat, and he didn't even see a second yellow. It's a straight red for the victory captain. They're down to 10 men.
He just flew into that tackle. He's mistimed it horrendously. The up and under, he's gone way over the ball. That is dangerous for Muscat.
When I saw his name... No, but when I saw... Yeah, I know you're
scared.
Scared
when I heard the name as well. Yeah, absolutely terrified.
Yeah, he was a really scary player to play against. I don't think I had the pleasure. But he is a Millwall legend or a folk hero there. Obviously, we know about his fire. But when I looked him up and what he's been doing, he's been a very successful manager over there in Australia with Melbourne. He's recently become available. There are worse punts out there, I'd suggest, than Kevin Muscat. Because I just think at Millwall, if you think of all the 92 clubs, Millwall had one of the clearest identities, I think. And it's one of those jobs where it helps if you know what it's all about to be in charge of Millwall, to play for Millwall, to run Millwall. So with that in mind, I think that taking a punt on him might be worth it.
Did he put you into Rosehead a couple of times, Muscat?
Yeah, must have done, yeah. I just wanted to say, finally, obviously, Neil's done an unbelievable job, and he's protected his reputation in terms of going and getting another good role. I've got no doubts about that. But just a word on Adam Barrett, actually, thrown into it, probably only had one day on the training ground. Well, straight away, when I saw the team sheet, Tom Bradshaw as a lone striker, it meant that the centre-halves, if the temptation this season and the back end of last season was to just boom it diagonally into the final third, they couldn't do that on Saturday. So they played short into midfield. Bradshaw was probably a 9 out of 10 in that first half. Got fortunate, obviously, for the opening goal and the sending off, which was obviously wrong. But for 45 minutes, that was quite a different Millwall that I witnessed. So credit him, and he'll come into the running, and obviously he's linked with a Southend job, so he's going to have some big decisions to make.
As a trial game, then. He played a blinder.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Interesting. What,
in terms of the odds then, Joe, is Adam Barrett in the running? Is he favourite for the Millwall job?
Well, Gary Rowett's the favourite at 6-4, quite some way ahead of the chasing pack. Roy Keane's the second favourite, actually, at 9-2, although he's, as we'll talk later, also been linked to the Sunderland job as well. Adam Barrett's the third favourite at 6-1, and then Kevin Muscat at 9-1 there. Mm. The rest of them are 10-1 or bigger, other names in the mix. Chris Hughton, Tim Cahill, Gareth Ainsworth, Phil Parkinson, but again, he's been highly linked with the Reading job, and Sol Campbell.
What about Barnsley?
We've got joint favourites at the top of the Barnsley betting, Bobby Hassel and Neil Redfern, both 4-1. Adam Murray, who's currently in caretaker charge, is 5-1, third favourite, and then it's 10-1 or bigger. So it looks like it's a toss-up between those three at the moment, with other similar names again in the mix. Gareth Ainsworth at 12-1, Neil Harris at 12-1, Phil Parkinson at 12-1, Chris Hughton 20-1. So a lot of the same names are cropping up in all of these
markets. Yeah, I guess the favourites at the top of that list, a lot of them involved with the club already, academy
it's
level.
It's pretty uninspired though, isn't it?
It isn't great, but that job is quite a unique one in that you've got so many young players to work with. They just don't sign anyone. Oh,
you've got this money ball thing that they're trying to do as well. Which
I mean, I've always felt that that's going to have its own ceiling. And maybe that ceiling is when you get to the championship, you need a bit more nous. And certainly you need players with championship experience. I think that Barnsley's problems this season have been caused by the board's policy in terms of who they wanted to sell or who they agreed to sell and their continuation of this, you know, strategy of theirs where they have to go so young.
Joe mentioned Reading there. They've probably parted company with Jose Gomez by the time you're listening to this. John Percy of the Telegraph breaking that on Tuesday night. They've only won twice this season. That was against Huddersfield and Cardiff back in August.
Reading Football Club can announce that Jose Gomez has left his position as first team manager. We would like to sincerely thank Jose for his hard work during his tenure as manager at Reading Football Club, and we wish him the very best of luck in his future career.
Joe's alluded to it there, Sam. Phil Parkinson feels like a good fit, former Reading player, should the vacancy arise.
Just looking down my list of 75 managers that I scribbled down on the train this morning.
Kerbishley? What, is he in there?
Kerbs? No, he hasn't made it, mate. Hasn't made it. Well, the shout seems to be Mark Hughes, doesn't it? Because of Mark Bowen, who came in as technical director back end of last season. And obviously they've got the history, I think, 17, 18 years of working together. So it,
again, uninspired.
Well, it sparked a lot of debate. Obviously, Ady Williams, former Reading captain who now works for BBC Berkshire, was putting it out there last night. And yeah, a lot of doom and gloom about that potential appointment. But if Mark Bowen's at that club, you'd have to think there's some substance to it. I don't know. I mean, 9 games out of 38, I think he's had in charge, and obviously he did wonderfully well back end of last season to unite the fan base, really. And there seemed to be real progression going into this season. And he wasn't backed until the last minute of the transfer window, where he has spent quite a large amount of money. And I think we can compare that to clubs across the EFL, really, when they've been given a chance to rebuild after escaping relegation. We expect to see that progress. But it's only been a short time. And I just think they need some continuity at Reading. You know, Stam and Clement and now another manager. It's been a revolving door. I'd like to see him back, because they were one little finish. Puskas made a mess of one at Bristol City the other day from getting a good point.
Well, I think I didn't see a team that are down tools for the manager in that game. I mean, they all over Bristol City, a really good Bristol City team at times. They've got a lot of bravery on the ball. They look to pop it around no matter who they're playing against. Swift and was missing from that game. Ajaria, both excellent additions. Ajaria was a pick, one of the lone picks with Miazga and Boy, who's done okay at times. So I think his recruitment was okay, considering it was last minute. I think when you lose 4 of your 5 home games, that puts a lot of pressure on yourself, especially when the ownership probably go to the home games. So that wouldn't have helped. I feel like it's a touch harsh. Phil Parkinson would be absolutely the right choice. He's a Reading legend. Definitely lift the place. And having spoken to him, I, you know, sat next to him on the quest show not that long ago, he doesn't want a long break. He was up for a short break, and then he was keen on getting straight back in. And he said, look, my children are a bit older now. He lives in York. But he said, if the right job comes up, I'll be prepared to go anywhere. So I'm pretty sure if Reading came knocking, he would be very, very keen.
Do you do odds on Reading, even though there's somebody still in position, Joe?
Yeah, so we've kind of prepared the market. It's not on site yet. As soon as the...
I feel bad talking about it, to be honest. Nathan Jones.
If Reading and Gomez do part ways, the odds look like this. Mark Hughes, 4-6, so odds on already to get the job. John O'Shea, 4-1, second favourite. Phil Parkinson, 6-1, and I'm very much in agreement that he would be the right man for the job, in my very humble opinion.
Quickly checks Reading Twitter page, having come off Colleen Rooney's. No statement yet from Reading. So the Championship benefiting from a break. We're going to do likewise and get to League One next.
You've heard the podcast. Now read the website, thetotallyfootballshow.com. There you'll find the very best from the podcasts, plus some white-hot original features. This week, Nick Miller argued that Daniel Stendel was done wrong at Barnsley, Rafa Honigstein explains why Niko Kovac is bungling the phasing out of Thomas Muller at Bayern, Jesse Parker-Humphreys wonders when Big Phil Neville is going to stop being such a massive scaredy-cat, and so very much more. That's TheTotallyFootballShow.com. Find it on the internet.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
League One then, where there's some wacky goings-on occurring. The headlines include Sunderland and Jack Ross parting company, that following their 2-0 loss to Lincoln. Bergkamp, Larsen and Kaut to become chairboys? Probably not, but those three were supposedly dead set on buying Wycombe Wanderers. That Gareth Ainsworth interview Caroline did has really had a bigger effect than we first thought, maybe. Joey Barton's in court today, Wednesday, charged with ABH after that incident with Daniel Stendel last season. And Sol Campbell has been interviewed for the Southend job. I called this weeks ago. First things first, though, Sunderland, it's club statement time again.
Sunderland AFC announced this afternoon that it had terminated the contract of manager Jack Ross. SAFC chairman Stuart Donald said, "This is a decision that has been made with a heavy heart. When we arrived at the club 18 months ago, we appointed Jack because we felt that he was the right man to take Sunderland forward over a number of years. Jack has worked extremely hard and has helped us achieve stability at the club, and I sincerely thank him for his efforts. I hope and believe he will go on to have a successful career in management."
Phil Smith's a journalist for the Sunderland Echo. He's been heard on the Roker Report pod, which he's just recorded, and is frankly far better placed than us to tell you what's going on, geographically and journalistically speaking. So we've got Phil Smith on the line from the Sunderland Echo. Phil, Jack Ross has gone. Not really a surprise. Maybe the timing a little bit of a shock, but what's the reaction from Sunderland supporters been?
I think supporters probably for a little while have felt that it's a decision that had to be made. Jack started really well at Sunderland, to be fair. He was a very popular figure. Performances probably started to dip towards the end of last season. He had the playoff final, a massive missed opportunity, early goal given away by Charlton, if you remember that horrendous own goal. Couldn't take advantage. And so coming into this season, it was almost automatic promotion. They had to get it. They had to show signs early on that they'd learn from their mistakes to improve the team. And unfortunately, in the first kind of 11 games, they're doing okay, as you can see in the table. But he's probably lost that confidence that he could get over the line this season.
Phil, of all the names that have been bandied around in the last 24 hours, Roy Keane jumps out to me. The reason being, love him or loathe him, I would think he's got quite a good reputation amongst the Sunderland supporters, considering what he did before. Would you welcome that, and do you think the supporters would?
Well, I certainly would as a journalist, for fairly obvious reasons. The guy's absolute dynamite. I think if Roy got the job, I think the wave of excitement would be absolutely incredible. I don't think you can ever really understate what that first season, and indeed much of the second season, the first year in the Premier League, just what it was like under Roy Keane. The sense of glamour was part of it, but general excitement and general sense that, okay, this is a club that's having a real go here. Hang on, we've got Roy Keane at the helm. But it kind of fits into a wider question, I think, about where Sunderland are at now in terms of, you look at the list of names, you mentioned Roy Keane. I'm looking at the other names that have been touted so far. Daniel Stendel, Gareth Ainsworth, Phil Parkinson, Gary Rowett. These are all guys with hugely different backgrounds, hugely different styles of play. And what that tells you is that a club at the moment that hasn't quite worked out which direction it wants to go in. Does it want a short-termist, let's get out of this league, whatever, and kind of worry about it after that? Or is it still looking at, right, we want someone who is going to build over a period of time? I'm not sure that inside the club they know the answer to that question yet. And I think that's maybe why at the moment we have this kind of slightly strange mix of candidates who don't seem particularly coherent, if that makes sense.
Lastly, Phil, what's the latest with this on-again, off-again takeover? It all seems a bit Rachel and Ross, as in Ross Geller, not Jack Ross. Is it actually going to go ahead? Is the fact that the current regime have got rid of the manager a sign that maybe it's slowed down or stopped?
Well, I think this is a very, very difficult one to unpack. I'd probably need an entire podcast for it, but I think the simplest way to put it is that the current owners have always said that they want to be involved in the day-to-day running of the club, no matter what happened in terms of bringing anyone else in. So I think you could argue that they'd be capable or in a position to make this decision. Either way, I think it's just it's been such a long-term thing, because one of the first things Stuart Donald said when he took over the club in his first press conference was, if we're talking about competing with Man City or teams like that, I'm not your guy. I can fund the club at this level, but you know, I'm not the person who can take them to the top 10 of the Premier League. So it's been a constant on-off, because there's always been this awareness, and there've always been these discussions that Stewart can do so much now, but in the future, some extra help's going to be needed. And he's insisted that it's still very much ongoing. He's still very hopeful. And he said that he'll tell fans at the weekend what's going on. And that's going to be a huge, huge moment for the club, because you've got to put this managerial search in the wider context of what's happening. And let's make no mistake, whoever comes in is going to have a huge influence on what happens next. And the manager's a big part of that, whoever it may be.
Phil Smith from the Sunderland Echo there. Anne-Marie Batson asks, Jack Ross sacked from Sunderland a few hours before kickoff, fair or harsh? So this was last night's leasing.com trophy game against Grimsby. Sam, doesn't really matter if it's before a leasing.com trophy game, does it?
No, of course it doesn't. No, I don't think the timing really matters in relation to this game. His staff, I think it was James Fowler, took the game last night, would have been more than competent at doing that. And they got themselves a victory and probably an important goal for Will Grigg. McNulty got another one as well. So, yeah, that'll do the players some good before the next game. The writing's been on the wall. Again, I sound like a broken record, but I know Jack a little bit, and I know two members of his staff I played with. So, good people, great lads. So, I'm sad that they're potentially going to lose their jobs as well. 60 games, just the 7 defeats. Only Manchester City and Liverpool have had fewer since he began as Sunderland manager. So, it shows you that they've been hard to beat, but they've been too defensive. That's been the criticism from the Sunderland fans, and the 23 draws, of course, the majority won once, I would presume, haven't done him any favours. So, yeah, I think as much as I don't want to say it, he's probably taken them as far as he can and had enough time now, considering the amount of criticism that's been snowballing amongst the Sunderland supporters.
Yeah, I've been Team Jack, I suppose, all the way through. I thought he deserved longer. He has been too defensive. The numbers don't lie, they've not gone on and won enough games, have they? In terms of shots per game, 17 teams in the division have more shots per game this season than Sunderland. When you, and I looked at the statement from Stuart Donald, and he basically said, we've got the biggest budget, we've got the best facility, everything's the best. So when 17 more teams are having more shots than you and you're 6th in the league, then you're in trouble, aren't you? And that is the reason he's lost his job. I think that you need probably someone slightly more ambitious tactically to come in and take that job, because the players are good enough to get promoted. I said at the start of the season it'll be Ipswich and Sunderland. I still think it'll be Ipswich and Sunderland, providing Sunderland choose wisely now.
How about Wickham then? David Ornstein, The Athletic's latest signing, wrote a piece this week claiming that Dirk Kuyt, Dennis Bergkamp and Henrik Larsson had clubbed together to buy Wanderers, even adding Ronald Koeman as a consultant. However, the club decided they preferred a bid from American businessman Rob Coffig, and that's in the process of being examined by the Wickham Supporters Trust, with Gareth Ainsworth warning of potentially dire consequences for the club if new investment isn't forthcoming soon. We hope they get sorted one way or another quickly. What is it, though, with this trend of ex-players getting involved with clubs at a level we haven't really seen before? The class of 92 at Salford is the one that sticks out. You got Beckham with Inter Miami, etc. Is it just the fact that these top-end players from the last 10, 15 years are much, much wealthier than their predecessors, so they can afford to do this?
Yeah, I think it's a big part of that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an attractive proposition, isn't it, to be in charge and mould something from nothing, from, you know, the lower reaches of the English ladder. But I mean, Wickham's obviously, the proximity to London's always going to be an attractive one. It's a brilliant club, loved playing there, loved playing for them, and loved going back there. So I can see the appeal, because it would be an easy commute and it'd be a nice place to live. They are in dire need of a bit of help. I think Gareth's been pretty open about that. Even when he was linked with that Lincoln role, he was very vocal that Wickham needs some support, some financial support, if they're going to maintain what they're doing at the moment, which is magnificent. And on the pitch, they keep amazing us with their powers of recovery, because it can't be a fluke that the players don't get deterred when they go behind in games against good teams, top teams in that division. The most recent one, Peterborough, who a lot of teams have crumbled when they've been put under pressure, especially by that front three that they've got. So, wonderful result last time out. And, you know, no surprise that, you know, Wickham will continue to have people look at them as a nice proposition.
All right, if we look ahead to some of the weekend standout fixtures then, Blackpool versus Rotherham. What a difference a takeover makes. Blackpool as a club and a team unrecognisable from last season. They start the weekend in fourth. Blackpool looking for promotion. They've got a manager who knows what this kind of level of football is about in Simon Grayson. Bloomfield Road is approaching full again. It all feels very calm and very positive.
Well, I think the table looks good, but I don't think the recent performances have been brilliant. I don't think the Blackpool fans have been that excited by the levels, especially not at Bolton the other day. I persevered for about 15 minutes. Defensively, very good. Tilt, who has been a bit inconsistent this season. Him and Hennigan seem to be fantastic defensively, and they've gone to a back four after starting the season with a back five. So that's a real positive from the other night. Missing Delfonso, missing Kai Kai. Lads that we spoke about, start of the season, that trio with Nangele looked like they were going to be a real force. So they're a bit one-dimensional into Nangele at the moment, bit pedestrian in midfield. So I don't think things have been brilliant. But of course, you look at the table and you look at Simon Grayson's track record across a season, you hope that they can have a successful time. And I think this weekend is going to be a very difficult game against Rotherham, who Adrian's going to talk about back to basics during a wonderful comprehensive victory against Coventry last time out.
Always kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, I think, Rotherham. Not quite good enough for the Championship, maybe a bit too good for League One. How are they faring back in the
field? It's been a mixed bag. I think that much is fair to say. Going into this game, you have to say that the form book says they're both a bit mid-table-y. But ultimately, I suspect they will be challenging for the playoffs. I tipped up Rotherham at the start of the season, so I'm a bit disappointed by the way they've started. They've got good depth, though. Really good depth under Warne, who made a lot of changes for that win against Coventry. He shook up the team. He changed the system. He's been a 4-3-3 man. He went 4-4-1-1, which isn't a whole lot different. But he had Crooks behind Smith, sort of benched Ladapo, which would have taken a bit of guts on his part. And yeah, look, when they get going, Rotherham, they can be really, really powerful and blow teams away. We saw that against Bolton. We saw it against Coventry. And Coventry, who we have bigged up, I've noticed what's creeping into their game is that they take so many chances at the back. They're going to gift you opportunities. And Rotherham made the most of that. So, no, you look at the team. They've got good young wide players now as well, with Wiles and Hasty, who's come in from north of the border, who's looked good. And they've got competition for places up top. So, no, I think Rotherham go into this game feeling much better about themselves than Blackpool do, which makes it really interesting.
Portsmouth take on Gillingham at Fratton Park. Pompey have had two big wins, albeit not hugely impressive, against Bolton and then of the last gasp variety at Doncaster. Sam, are those wins what's kept the jacket on? Sorry.
Yeah, should have been beaten at Doncaster. I think if Doncaster had a centre-forward, I think Sadlier played up top, who scored a couple of goals first weeks of the season for Doncaster, but he's not an out-and-out striker. They were missing Ennis at one end and Cameron John, the two lads from Wolves, who have done brilliantly. I think if they were in the side, Portsmouth could have been talking about another defeat. So, again, it was defensively where they impressed. I just look at Portsmouth, I don't know about you, Adrian, and this has been my point of view probably for the last 18 months. I just see a team that lacks a bit of a spark. And I look at some of the other teams at the top end of League One and they excite me a little bit more. They'll hope that this changes now. Harness is back from injury, who was really promising first few weeks of the season. But it's a very organised team. It's a team that's going to grind out a lot of results, but they're not going to win too often comprehensively. So they'll be delighted to have got that goal from Harrison late on. And he was on for Marquis at halftime. We're just waiting for Marquis to get a bit of consistency as well. So I don't see the speculation about Kenny Jackett going away, especially given what's happened in the last week.
So Gillingham played Ipswich in the, I'm going to call it the EFL trophy because I've said leasing.com like 500 times in the last 24 hours. All I can think about is stuff that I want to lease. Yeah, they met on Tuesday. It was a match notable for the pre-match beef between the two bosses. Steve Evans and Paul Lambert might both be from Glasgow, but it seems that's where the common ground ends. They fell out during the league meeting earlier in the season. And whilst Evans said he'd share a glass of wine with Lambo post-match, the Ipswich boss said, "Don't expect me to shake his hand." Whose side are you on, Adrian? He asked sarcastically.
Oh, Lambert all day long. Yeah, look, Steve Evans can have a row with anyone, can't he? I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I would hazard a guess that their initial fallout may have been sparked by something that Steve Evans said or did on the touchline. Therefore, I'm team Lambo.
You feel like Steve Evans is very much the Rebecca Vardy in this bracket.
It's the best article I've read this season. I think them arguing about who's from the worst Glasgow suburb. Genius. I'm going to give it a bit of balance because Steve Evans gave £250 to the South End supporters, the charity, who'd walked from Roots Hall to Priestfield before their game. Yeah. And he was very nice about the young man who missed the two penalties as well. And Jolly, I believe he is, on loan from Bournemouth. And Steve Evans said that he would back him to the hilt, basically, and he'll be in the team next time out. So
it's mellowing.
He's got some portion of a heart.
In fairness, when I have met him before, I've had to work with him.
Yeah,
I was a little bit scared because I've been quite scathing of him in the past, but thankfully I don't think he's read or listened to my criticism of him. I was so two-faced. And he was actually really softly spoken and very calm in a sort of media environment. It was on a radio show, and he was perfectly nice. So yeah, he's obviously got that side to him. But yeah, I just wonder who'd win in a fight, really, out of Lambert and Evans. I think Lambert's got enough steel, probably more size about him.
I'd imagine.
I think I would take Lambert.
Kick Evans in the swingers and run away. And yeah, you're gonna catch it.
I would think that Lambert's like a 5 mile run round Suffolk before training. Yeah. Steve Evans isn't doing that.
It's not quite Clough versus Revy, but it's quite funny. Producer Abby rightfully asking the serious question, who would win between Colleen Rooney and Rebecca Vardy in a fight? Let's exclude Rebecca Vardy's pregnancy. She's in a normal state.
Who's pregnant, sorry?
Vardy is. She's not for the fight.
Oh, she looks quite feisty, but I've got to back Colleen if she used to... She probably met Wayne at a boxing club, didn't she, in a Liverpool suburb?
What?
Probably.
He was a boxer, wasn't he? Rooney? When he was
younger? Whole family were boxers.
Yeah, whole family. Yeah. She probably met him out, you know what I mean?
She's only Diddy, though, isn't she?
I got back Colleen there.
Rebecca Vardy just looks hard.
I
wouldn't fancy myself against Rebecca Vardy, let alone Colleen Rooney. So I'm
astonishing insight. I mean, if you're listening, British Podcast Award judges, that's the clip we're sending in this year. You doing odds on that, Joe?
I think
Vardy
we
versus Rooney.
Yeah, we should do.
If not that, how about the Sunderland managerial market?
Wayne versus Jamie.
Ooh, man,
that's a tough call, isn't it?
I think that's impossible.
Rooney all day. That.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Vardy'd
be relentless, wouldn't he?
I think Jamie would resort to dirty tricks, wouldn't he?
It's a 12-rounder unless Vardy gets disqualified. Anyway, Sunderland manager, who's it going to be?
Well, one name that Phil didn't touch upon, he named a load of names that have been linked with the job, but one he didn't touch is the actual favourite, Paul Cook. Current Wigan manager, big gamble on him this morning, actually. He's gone from 20-1 into 7-4. If you kind of look what he did with Wigan in 2017-18, they certainly weren't cautious, were they, when they stormed to the title in League One. So I can see where the money's coming from with regards to that. But yes, all the same names again. Gareth Ainsworth, 7-2. Daniel Stendel, 6-1. Kevin Phillips, 12-1. Roy Keane, 14-1. And Big Sam, 14-1 as well.
No.
For the purposes of narrative for Sunderland Till I Die Season 2, it should be the return of Chris Coleman, though. That would make a beautiful story.
I guess so.
Okay, he can stay in China. How about Southend? One tip that I seem to have got right, which I deserve a fair amount of praise for, is Sol Campbell. Is he the favourite for the Southend job now?
Yeah, I think when the job first became available, I think he was about 12-1 when you tipped him up. He's now 6-4, so you'd be sitting very pretty on that bet, for sure. Adam Barrett, we've already mentioned him. He's 13-8, second favourite. Henrik Larsson on the drift, 3-1, third favourite, and then it's 8-1 or bigger. Neil Harris 8-1, and then 20-1 or bigger.
Adrian, you've got your hand in the air. I'm thinking you're what, 66-1?
No, I don't think I'm there. I turned down an invite to be there, to be like the former player guest this weekend. Couldn't make it, unfortunately. So that was a shame. I hope they invite me in another game. Would have gone on to go on the pitch and everything. Quite exciting. But anyway.
You've been on the pitch before, right?
I know, but not for a long time. And I'd got a free dinner. No, I was up for it, but I just couldn't make it. Anyway, I've done a bit of digging with my contacts around the area, and they just suspect that there's a bit more to it. This dragged out search for a new manager, the growing fear is that Ron Martin is looking for investment, and that there isn't really enough money with him to move the club forward. So part of the search for a new manager is tied in with which investors he can get on board for the club moving forward. So that, I think, goes some way to explaining why it's taken so long. It's damaging the team. I mean, the team morale is at a real low at the moment. They're playing very, very poorly. Same mistakes happening game in, game out. Personally, Campbell or Barrett, be more than happy with that.
All this South End chat week to week, anyone would think the boss of this company was a South End supporter. And before we leave League One, Joe, the games we've talked about, Blackpool versus Rotherham, I was thinking home win, but now I've heard what the chaps have said. What's the price on Rotherham taking the points?
Well, Blackpool are slight favourites, but it's very, very close in the betting. Blackpool 6-4, Rotherham 7-4 with the draw 12-5.
Pompey Gillingham?
Portsmouth odds on to win this one at 7-10, Gillingham 4-1, and the draw 27-10, so nearly 3-1 there.
Well, that was a nice time in League One, wasn't it? Will League Two be so accommodating? Only one way to find out.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football League Show from Muddy Knees Media.
League Two behind the curve in terms of managerial axings. Is that a word, axings? Doesn't have a squiggly red line under it on my screen, so yes. Here are your headlines. Apparently a 2-2 draw with Scunthorpe is horrendous if you're Plymouth Argyle and Ryan Lowe is to be believed. Lowe post-match said, "I think it was a disgusting game. I didn't like it one bit from start to finish." FGR top the league, but just 3 points cover the top six teams. Also, Stevenage still haven't won a league match, but they did win in the leasing.com trophy on Tuesday. That's leasing.com. Seeing as there are no sackings, let's head straight to the weekend's action. Swindon versus Plymouth. Sam, I watched the meeting of these two in the aforementioned internet website Higher Purchase Thing trophy last night, and Plymouth absolutely schooled your old mob. I know it's essentially reserve sides in this competition, but does that have any impact on the game on Saturday, other than the fact that you can't, if you played last night for Swindon, go to Richie Wellens and say, right then, I'll have a place in the team on Saturday?
Yeah, that's the biggest talking point, is the lads that have been knocking on the door and been walking around the training ground, annoyed that they're not getting regular game time, had a chance last night, and that was, I've heard Richie Wellens' comments this morning, that was his team talk, go out there, express yourself, no pressure, none of them are giving him a decision to make at the weekend, but it's 8 or 9 changes, so there's not much relevance. It's a defensive crisis at Swindon. Zakuani's come in as a free agent, was good at Bradford last time out, but a big part of their success this season, put aside what the front players have done, Yates and Doyle, Isgrove, been magnificent, but Baudry and Dion Conroy, good ball-playing centre-halves, which find good passes into midfield to release that talent. So it's a huge problem. I understand young Iandolo had a bit of a chastening experience up at Valley Parade at left-back as well, so Zeki Fries could come back in there. The hopeful Baudry could be fit at the weekend, which will give them a much better opportunity against a stuttering Plymouth side. But if you'd have said to me after the Leyton Orient victory for Swindon a few weeks ago, when they looked like a top three team, no question that they'd be having this this stumble, I would have been very surprised. But I think there is defensive factors, clearly.
Plymouth, Clarkie, really good last night. Sasevic in particular caught my eye, but it's not been the start to the season that we were anticipating from one of, if not the promotion
favorite. No, I think a lot of mistakes have crept into their game, given some bad goals away. Some of the marking inside the box from crosses has been poor. There's an awful one at the weekend from a goal kick. So I think individuals have had lapses rather than it being disastrous. They've got a lot of talent. Plymouth Argyle, I think they've got 13 different goal scorers already this season, so it's not as if they're reliant on one or two players. And it was interesting that Ryan Lowe sort of threatened to wield the axe, didn't he, in January. He's come out and said, look, if it doesn't get better, I'm not afraid to get rid of 3 or 4 in January and bring 3 or 4 in, because we need to go up. He's speaking very boldly. And that, I think, is probably good news for Plymouth. It might be the shake-up that they need. This has got a look of a good football match. Two teams that like to have the ball. Well, Swindon are very good on the ball, but they're actually sometimes better when they break, aren't they? So I would expect Plymouth to probably boss the lion's share of possession in this game. Press Swindon back. Swindon will pose that danger on the break. So I think this is a really attractive game to watch. And if I lived in that part of the world and I had a bit of time to kill, I might buy a ticket for this one.
Let's go on to Leighton Orient Walsall. While we're with you, Clarky, you were going to tell us all about Walsall last week, but time got the better of us, so the floor is yours.
Well, it's a very different picture, isn't it? Because they lost to Salford 3-0 at home, which was off the back of a great win at Crawley the week before. And I was going to talk about the wide player, Wes McDonald, last week, who had drawn great praise from Darryl Clarke. He's a winger and you know, I always look out for wingers, and I like wingers to do well. But having been one myself, I also know that just inconsistency is just par for the course. And one week you can be the king, you can be praised in the papers. It happened to me. I remember Alvin Martin. One week, I think he said, told the papers that you know, I was too good for League One, that, you know, they'd do well to hang on to me. And literally 2 weeks later, I was on the bench. And this is the life of a winger. And Wes McDonald, who had been brilliant against Crawley, didn't turn up in the game against Salford, and he got the hook before the hour mark, and it just struck a chord with me. For me, Walsall are a team at the moment that are better on the road. At home, for whatever reason, that they clam up, not particularly creative. But away from home, where they are solid, I think that was an anomaly. The defeat to Salford, they are pretty solid by and large. So I'd quietly fancy Walsall to bounce back in this game and nick something, certainly a draw at least.
Orient, Sam, a club you represented, not that that's particularly rare. what's going on? I mean, are they actually going to appoint a manager at some point?
I'll have a better idea after the weekend because I'm going down there. And obviously, I worked with Martin Ling, not particularly successfully, and I know Ross Embleton as well. So I'm sure that will be discussed at the weekend. They won at Northampton, so maybe that's just put the brakes on a little bit with making a decision. Martin Ling sounded like he had it all in hand, was going to meet a few people, whittle it down to a short list, and then it was going to go to the hierarchy. So I'm sure that's in the process at the moment. On the pitch, the thing that jumps out to me is lots of different systems, quite a contrast in the way they're being set up. I mean, he played a 3-4-1-2 last week against Port Vale at home, 4-3-3 at Northampton. So, you know, there's quite a lot of changes going on there, but you know, they picked up a couple of really good results, and the two lads who have impressed me, not always from the start, but Jordan Maguire-Drew and Louis Dennis, both on the bench at Northampton. So I thought they were the main game changers, but they found a way to win. James Brophy getting the goal. Mm-hmm. Matt Harold reintroduced to the fray. He's only made two starts this season. Mm-hmm. It's meant Connor Wilkinson going wide, but I think it just shows that there's probably more depth there than maybe we first realised. And the pattern of the season so far says to me that Orient are going to be okay. They're going to be able to get enough victories to be away from the relegation zone. But be interesting to see how they go at the weekend against the Walsall team, who I don't think, having thought they were going to be brilliant defensively and not score enough goals, it's kind of flipped on its head the last couple of weeks. So it's very confusing looking at them. I would see that potentially being a draw. Mm.
Joe, manager odds for Orient. A couple of people I want to ask you about price-wise who caught my eye. They are Kevin Nolan, our friend Chris Powell, and Stephen Constantine, who I hadn't heard of until I looked at it this morning. He had 4 years in charge of India. He's also been manager of Rwanda, Sudan and Malawi.
Oh, right. No.
Good side.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be well prepared for East London. The Leighton Orient manager odds, it looks like a toss up between two. Derek Adams and Colin Calderwood lead the betting 5-6 and 6-4. Other names: Kevin Nolan 16-1, Darren Curry 9-1, played there for quite some time, and Sol Campbell 20-1. Phil Parkinson 20-1.
Colin Calderwood.
That's a win. We just signed new contract with Cambridge.
And he's Cambridge United. Lots and lots of positives I'm seeing for Cambridge United this season. He's definitely improve them. Surely he wouldn't jump ship. I think Derek Adams is a pretty good shout for that job.
What about the odds on the actual game then, Joe? Orient versus Walsall.
Orient are favourites to win this one, 5-4. Walsall 11-5, and the draw 23-10.
And Swindon Plymouth, presumably last night doesn't impact the odds.
No, not at all. Swindon are favourites to win this one, 11-10. Plymouth 23-10 and the draw 13-5. But yeah, it should be a corker, that one.
All right, once again, we're out of time. Just enough of it left, though, to squeeze in what's rapidly becoming the most underwhelming feature of the show. What's Clarkie up to this weekend? It's got to be something good if you turn down Southend.
I've turned down everything this weekend because I need a breather. I'm not doing my radio show this weekend. I'm having a bit of family time, so which is much needed, I think. So we might end up Thomas Land.
Really?
Rock and roll. It's quite near to me.
Are you expecting to be better than Peppa Pig World?
Well, I'll compare and contrast and report back next week.
For clarity, is Thomas the Tank Engine, presumably?
Of course.
Yeah. Thomas Frank.
So.
Drayton Manor. It's in the Midlands.
All right. I watched one of the new Thomases for the first time the other day with my son, who's just about able to watch TV. Not having it at all. Not a patch on the old school. Fat controller. Didn't even see Henry. Poor.
You've got to move with the times, Matt. Mm. See, you can't live in the past. Things move on.
No Ringo Starr, no party for me. Sam, you are at Brisbane Road.
Yeah, Orient on Saturday. I click into gear when it's international break. You know what I mean? That's when I step up and give everything for the cause. Orient Saturday, Coventry Sunday. Looking forward to it. Okay.
Mind-blowing stuff, guys. More of the same next week. I should expect so. See you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.